Welcome to the Messianic Media Podcast, a discussion of Messianic, Christian, and secular artistic works with David and Mark. So our main focus for this special Messianic Media Halloween episode is going to be mostly Christian songs about that we think are related to Halloween, or at least songs from Christian artists, and obviously there's discussions on that. Did you celebrate Halloween a lot as a kid?
Yeah, a little bit. I think my very first Halloween costume was a little bunny rabbit. This little bunny rabbit that my family would have us decorate, you know, wear up. One of the best costumes that I ever made was a Tin Man costume, where I used like a strainer as like the hat. Or colander, or whatever. What do you call it? I spray painted some oatmeal containers to make the arms, and some other plastic to make the arms and legs. But then my favorite costume that I ever did was I was Darth Vader for 3 or 4 Halloweens, and this was back in the day before they had all the cool new lightsaber. There were some lightsaber toys back then, but my brother had one that was broken. So then I made my own Darth Vader lightsaber out of a flashlight, and then put some added a plastic tube on it, and then added a red filter to make the red lightsaber. And my friend had a Darth Vader mask, so I wore that and made my own outfit. It was pretty fun. How about you?
That's pretty cool. Well, we didn't really celebrate Halloween growing up or something like that.
Yeah.
We kind of have the Jewish holiday Purim.
Yeah.
My parents were, or at least initially, saying like, okay, well, we're not celebrating Halloween because it's a pagan holiday and stuff like that. But at least I did get to do dress up stuff and get candy and like kids. I mean, so Purim is its own little celebration. It's a Jewish holiday. It's, you know, in March or April. So it's a different time of the year, but it's basically, I think it copied some of the stuff from Halloween, like at where they
had really
that kind of festive stuff. They really amped up the costume elements and the sweets element.
Right.
Because of the influence of the Christian / secular holidays, stuff like that.
Yeah, I would definitely call Halloween not a Christian holiday. and actually in some ways, yeah, I don't really like the holiday, but I like the kids like the candy, basically. That's kind of what they like, the costumes.
Yeah. I think it is a fun thing, and I don't see anything inherently wrong with it. You know that I think it was Saudi Arabia, it's a banned holiday because Christian holidays are banned.
Interesting.
Valentine's Day.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I mean, I know the other thing with I took a class in college where we discussed like the early history, and there is like literally like a pagan, like this Irish pagan holiday called Samhain, with, you know, with like witches and altars and all stuff like that. It's spelled Samhain. But then people pronounce it Samhain, and I never quite figured out how that's supposed to work out. But yeah, ancient, like there's kind of a mix, I think, in a lot of the holiday, and then especially in the last like 50 years, I think it's changed too. I'm not like necessarily a fan of like people dressing up as like demons or anything like that, but kind of having the fun costumes is like having a kid dress up as Darth Vader is totally benign, I think.
To clarify, in like, you know, Saudi Arabia, a strict Islamic country, I'd say public celebrations are banned, but there's not really enforcement of private parties or things like that. Yeah, necessarily that I'm providing legal advice or anything like that. you'd want to research that more. By the way, if anyone's listening in Saudi Arabia, feel free to comment.
Yeah, great. That would be really interesting. It's fascinating to hear.
Islamic culture is considered a Christian holiday, and then Christian communities often or don't really consider it a Christian holiday and stuff like that, which makes sense. I did get to do some costumes that are basically like Halloween costumes. I even did, like, it was only a few years ago, I did a costume where I was like a ghost.
Yeah, I like the ghost costumes. Ghost costumes are fun.
It was fun.
You just like cut some holes in, for your eyes.
Yeah.
Did you have an accurate, like, did you accurately measure the width of your face, you know, to, you know, the nose and your, to fit your nose and your eyes so you could see out of it?
I was able to see out of it, but it wasn't as, so it was a little better than Strong Mads. It actually was, Darth Vader one or 2 years.
Awesome.
It was kind of nice because I had a friend that had a Darth Vader costume that was pretty legit, and then I was able to borrow it because it wasn't Halloween, you know.
Yeah, for prom.
Yeah, and then my younger brother was actually Luke Skywalker one of the years, so that was
cool.
That was funny. More recently, I kind of did a at work. I would do a Super Dave costume, which was based on the nickname that I got at work.
Nice. I've seen some pictures of the Super Dave and people referencing that.
That was pretty easy. I mean, I got an off-the-shelf cape, and then I just designed a custom one-off t-shirt and fun with that. Yeah. So we got a variety of songs instead of just one album this time. So first off, we're starting with Reliant K, with a song called My Girlfriend. Like, that's the actual name of the song, and there's no parentheses or anything, but...
But originally...
Yeah.
Originally, it was called Marilyn Manson Ate My Girlfriend on their initial release.
You know, like their demo and stuff like that. Yeah. It's just kind of a funny song. It feels tongue-in-cheek. I don't know if it's a time gap between when he wrote the song and when it was released. I think it could have started out as a mostly serious song. So absurd, kind of content-wise, that I just kind of assume that it's silly. What do you think?
Yeah, my introduction to Reliant K actually was with this album. So this was before the Anatomy of Tongue in Cheek. they had like two or three songs, and I forget if this song was on the sampler or not. But you know, a friend and I got the sampler, and then he also bought the album, so I listened to a lot in his car. And Marilyn Manson was, you know, hugely popular. There's that reference to Beautiful People and within the song, and Beautiful People was on the radio at the time. So my take on it was, it's definitely tongue in cheek. But he's doing it in a funny way. And I think he's also being sincere, and like, maybe some girl he used to know or used to date used to be kind of a believer, and then walked away from the faith and got into like goth culture or something, or she was kind of like a nominal believer, or, you know, she knew the singer. But yeah, it definitely doesn't seem like it's really like recent, you know, dating, or if this was even really his girlfriend or not, you know.
Right.
I think much less the eating part.
Behind the scenes kind of stuff on that. He wrote the song when he was 15. So I think that was something that's could be more serious. You know, I didn't get that reference at first with the Beautiful People.
Yeah.
That was just kind of a mean kind of line. You know, it's like, I don't know if it's really Marilyn Manson that's to blame for it. You know, it's catchy having it and an artist that people would actually recognize and things like that, you know?
Yeah. And I like the guitar riffs that they have going on in this song. It's ear catchy. You know, it makes you notice it, as opposed to just saying my girlfriend's kind of gotten into goth artwork or whatever like that. You know, it's a funnier way to say it, I guess.
Yeah.
But I think there is some sincerity to it, you know, like she'd rather basically get involved in this, you know, subculture than go to church basically, or,
yeah,
you know Jesus or know the Lord.
Did you watch the music video?
No, I didn't. I think I may have watched it back in the day, but I didn't get around to it this week. How about you?
Yeah, I did watch it. I'm sure I've seen it before, but you know, it was definitely a kind of low budget, intentionally sent off of monster kind of things. You know, where there's a giant Marilyn Manson that goes, that literally consumes the girlfriend, and then they have to go in and rescue her from inside the body and stuff like that. It's kind of bizarre. I think there was, you know, one of the lines is like, Satan consumed her mind, you know, which I think that he meant that. Des mentioned like his shows are overpriced, you know, which is such a
it's funny that I never noticed that line until actually just you know, like a few hours ago re-listening to the song.
That's one thing I did notice, that line. I think they got a little bit of flack about the song, like just from mentioning a secular artist, which is kind of funny from some Christians.
Yes, even though they're critiquing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's why also the name was changed to My Girlfriend from the original name.
I think it wouldn't have worked to have it on the CD artwork and stuff like that. Singer's talking about it. He said that, yeah, it's like every band has the one cliche song about losing the girl. They said they pretty much stopped playing the song by 2002 because they're kind of tired of the song, which is it was their first single, but I guess they had other singles by that point.
Yeah, and they eventually came around to have other, you know, losing the girlfriend songs. Yeah. They had plenty of them throughout their career, unfortunately.
It's fun and kind of fun playing with themes like that, like kind of a narc or stuff. So moving on to Skillet Monster, which was like them one of their main singles. It might be their most popular song. This is probably the only song that got real mainstream radio play out of their stuff. Some of their songs have played on Christian radios before, but it's interesting. Had you really heard the song before?
Yeah, I had. At times I've heard it and not realized it was Skillet. I had a Skillet album. I've had a Skillet album in the past, and I know the band, but I think I've heard this in other settings and not realized it was them. It's an interesting song. Yeah, it looks like on Spotify it has almost 300 million streams.
Gotcha.
Just on Spotify. Yeah, it's catchy. But then it's interesting for them as a band, because I think the monster is like, what do you think they're talking about here? Do you think they're talking about like sin inside and temptation and like the flesh? You know?
Yeah, I think that's definitely what they're talking about. It's light reference to it. You know, it's not that specific. I mean, it could be talking, you know, sin, addiction, drug use, and I think that's, you know, hate or anger, you know, and stuff.
Yeah.
Like that. It's interesting because it's quite a, you know, that's kind of a dark theme, but then because it's generic enough and, you know, it's driving rock and stuff like that, then it's used in like upbeat rock situations. You know, it's used to pump up the crowd.
Yeah. Like about that, like a basketball game or a football game or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of thing.
A big thing is it was used in a lot of wrestling promos.
Oh.
But yeah, that was used in some football stuff and some NBA and other songs on that album.
Skillet seems to kind of go this route and then also throw in the redemptive side. I listened to a little bit of their first album and I don't forget which song it was. I don't think it's Gasoline. It was another one.
Yeah, it took them a while. I mean, this was their seventh album, and I had been listening to them since at least the second or third. So they definitely changed their sound up. Some, like, they used to be kind of a Nine Inch Nails, grunge, electronic rock thing, and then they're now, it was now mostly like mainstream rock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the mainstream version of those styles. But yeah, they like lyrically though. In other songs, though, I can think of them that, you know, talking about, I have a sin nature and it's a battle within me. And then then there's the light of the Lord who's like redeeming me, that kind of idea. And then, but then this one, it's kind of like, just feels like a monster. almost like there's like the no hope in terms of like the believing side of it, but which is like, I guess, worthwhile to show at times, because they do have the rest of their body of work. But and sometimes, you know, for some people, for plenty of people, there's, you know, there's only the dark side of it without the any of the redeeming hope and light of Yeshua.
The music video is pretty generic as well. You don't get any clue what's going on. It's kind of like a laboratory experiment, and, you know, the singer wrapped in bandages being experimented on. So there's no
Dr. Frankenstein's creature.
Yeah. The band fought hard to have to have kind of like the guttural scream included in the radio song, or actually the album version.
The monster sounding version.
Yeah.
The monster sounding clip.
Real fucking monster.
That part.
Yeah, exactly. They wanted the band to sing it straight for the album/radio version, but they actually helped them made the song more popular.
Yeah, it's distinct. Yeah, it's a catchy riff.
It is. You know, I think it's an all right album overall, but I think there's, you know, it's like four or five songs that are really solid on it. So I'd give that a listen.
I need to go back and dig more into the Skillet's older albums though too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to do that.
Now we're going to a band that I hadn't heard of before called The Deadlines, which you pitched as that. And I think it's definitely fit of, you know, when you're talking about like Christian Halloween kind of songs, I think that's fitting. So why don't you talk about it for a bit?
So The Deadlines were a band on Tooth and Nail, which is generally a Christian label. And they did play some Christian festivals back in the day, but they were kind of an extreme band. Some people would say like the Misfits or, you know, kind of punk horror, goth horror, you know, goth punk kind of style of music. I think their music is really interesting. They were quite controversial back in the day. Early on in their sets, they actually would like pretend to, you know, spit blood, and they would wear makeup that would look like they were coming out of a coffin. And then when they released the album, Death and the Light, Death and Life in Rock and Roll, they inserted a card to kind of explain the message of each song, you know, in theory, how it might relate to like the theme of, you know, people being, you know, dead inside, or, you know, just, you know, kind of but you know, like that, I would say this isn't like, even though it was on a Christian label, I wouldn't call this a Christian album. They do kind of recognize that, you know, that's kind of the thing that people don't like to talk about a lot of times, is like, you know, the wages of sin is death, you know, due to the curse of Adam from the Adam and Eve in the garden, you know, we all are going to die. It's just something, it's part of, you know, and like even the cross, you know, Yeshua went to he had to die in order to redeem us. So on that, you know, there is like, you know, dwelling on it a little bit, I think is, you know, it's not something that we should shy away from. You know, we don't need to fear death. It doesn't have a sting. But yeah, this band was kind of, they were quite goofy in their approach, and they had some controversy back in the day. And I had, there were a few songs that I liked, and we're going to talk about one of them, called Go, Go to the Graveyard. The other one that I liked was, you know, Vampires in Love, which had a really funny hook, guitar riff, and keyboard punch. And there's like, two vampires met late one night, and it was love at first bite. So that's kind of to give you a taste of what kind of where this band's like humor and dark humor was, and their approach. But yeah, what were your thoughts about them, hearing them now and coming across them
in the last week or so? Yeah, it was a little weird hearing the album, you know, and you know, some of it was a little hokey, and some of it was fun enough. You know, I don't mind the theme and makeup costume thing. It sounds kind of funny. It seems interesting. There's some decent stuff. I liked how they had the, like, a organ that they added on in addition to, like, it being kind of pretty much straightforward punk music. Other than that, I guess there's technically a term called horror punk.
Mm-hmm.
So, Go-Go to the Graveyard was just kind of zombies coming for you. In the song Defend, they mentioned Preaching to the Dead, which, you know, it's kind of weird. I also thought it was pretty funny with, you know, I guess Tooth and Nail had some bands that weren't really Christian. I guess, I don't know if it was just stuff that they liked. I don't know if anything really succeeded.
Yeah.
I did think it was funny how they had different album art for the Christian market and for the regular market. Like, it doesn't seem too controversial there. You know, I mean, it's, you know, like, as kind of a classic zombie, and it's not like blood or gore and stuff like that. But it's, you know, for the Christian market, they just released one with a photo of the band members as the album cover. I don't think they really caught on. It's a little hard to find information about them now.
I mean, on the one hand, like, Preaching to the Dead, obviously, like, you know, once you're past, I think, but you know, spiritually dead, you know, people are walking around,
yeah,
you know, and we're spiritually dead and need to be awakened, and like, God uses, like, you know, the like in Ezekiel, you know the dry bones, and Ezekiel sees the vision of the, you know, they arise and wake, and basically the dry bones are, you know, in like, I think it's in Israel, right? Like, the spiritually dead part of Israel.
Yeah.
And they need to be awakened by the Spirit, you know, by the Lord.
Yeah, I think you got it exactly. But you're finding more Christian references on this. I really couldn't figure out anything, and I don't think they were really a Christian band.
I don't.
It's based on the
album, which, yeah,
I haven't listened to the second album. I don't know if there's things in that, but I was trying to find stuff. Like, there wasn't even, you know, I think it could have done references to Dry Bones and things like that.
I completely agree with you. The band's not putting that there. they attempted to, like, a little card Tooth and Nail did as, like, I think as a publicity, but yeah, I agree with you completely, though. You're not going to find Jesus within, or Yeshua within this at all.
Okay, well, moving on to Pound Foolish, which was a local band in San Diego that I knew. I thought they were pretty successful, you know, as far as a local San Diego Christian band. They didn't have much success outside of it, and they played for a while, you know, a few years, and then didn't quite succeed at getting a label deal and stuff like that.
But the
reason I bring up specifically the song Life Beyond Life is what inspired me to create this idea for songs, because I remember going to see them at a Halloween show, a Christian Halloween show. Could have been a day before or something like that, but it was definitely one of those alternative Christian things. So instead of Halloween, which I hadn't really been to that much, I don't know if you have experience with alternative Halloween stuff.
No, I mean, you and I played around that time. But yeah, no. We'll do, like, you know, I attended a church and they called it Fallapalooza, or they'll call it, like, yeah, Fall Festival or Harvest Festival, that kind of thing. Yeah, usually they don't want to use the word Halloween. Like, it's interesting, the holiday, you know, it's All Hallows Eve, and, you know, like Martin Luther with the Reformation, you know, that was October 31st. Like, historically, the Reformation Day was, you know, was that date back in the day. But yeah, the Halloween festival itself, usually, I think most churches try to do an alternative. But I never went to, like, a concert. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't mind, you know, churches putting events to try to reach kids and teens and stuff like that. Pound Foolish playing Life Beyond Life and, like, giving an intro that this is their Halloween spooky song. That was funny. you know, they played this song year round, you know, as part of their repertoire. They basically just had one album the years that I saw them, and I went to quite a bit of shows over the, like, the 2 or 3 years that they were active, and I knew about them. It's, you know, got spooky woods kind of, you know, whistling wind kind of sound, and they were able to do that live with pedals, so the guitar is making,
oh, nice,
making those sounds, as well as being able to also do the kind of fingering notes, which is the kind of the creepy soundtrack kind of thing for movies. So I thought that was really effective, as like a, you know, it goes into a rock song, but it could have worked as part of a film soundtrack, you know, maybe a little bit too much on the drums for it to be a true horror film intro. Like, I like that, and as well as the bass was effective in that too.
Yeah, it could be part of a climax though, right? Or yeah. Or you know, a suspenseful scene, chase scene or something.
The lyrics, you know, they are more outspoken about the faith. You know, they don't usually say, you know, Jesus or anything like that, but they do lots of scriptural references, absent from the body, present the Lord. And like a vision of seeing like heaven after death. And then it's like, death, where is your victory? I think the story's a little confusing on the song. I guess it's like a vision of life after life. Because then I think the person comes back to life at the end, like they're, or, you know, they realize that they weren't dead.
The story, it was harder for me to follow because initially he's looking forward to like, to being basically coming to the end of life, facing the end and passing, you know, going to the grave and then going beyond the grave. And then, towards the end of the song, he's like saying, breathe on me.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like, it's like he's asking for a renewal. Maybe he's, I mean, actually in my own testimony, you know, I considered the fact that I was, you know, that I was living in a temporal body, that definitely was part of, and also I realized, you know, this, my sin nature, and that I needed redemption. So that was, you know, I kind of looked forward, and then I can understand it kind of like in a vision kind of way, but in a direct story, it gets a little confusing.
Well, it's a song that's worth checking out. However, it's real hard to find. You can't really find it online, or, you know, they're not really even selling stuff. At the time I kept up with them on their website, you know, which obviously you have to pay to keep the website up, or on MySpace. And, well, technically they still have a page, you know, when MySpace got essentially wiped over the years. So it's not really active and stuff like that. Yeah. It's a solid album overall. You know, I think some of it, it's a long album. I think it's like 14 songs, and they're longer songs, you know, typically 5 to 6 minutes. So I think that it gets repetitive in points, and they do their songs really well, and they're good musically, but then the songs are too similar to each other.
Yeah. But yeah, some people who are like, you know, if they're like fans of Skillet, they might, you know, they might be interested in this kind of thing, this album, you know, especially if they want to go kind of do a early 2000s, you know, well, some people would call it new metal. I don't know how to describe them.
We opened for them in...
That was before I was in the band. I may have gone to that, but I mean, I think this was like this is right after.
Yeah.
I met you around the time, right around the time that you opened for them.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
Speaking of like early 2000s, The Insiders, which actually I don't know what year the song came out. I kind of assume a lot of the Christian ska especially comes out around the first, you know, 2000 to 2005, you know?
Yeah, it was around 99, 2000, something like that, I think. I'm pretty sure.
Gotcha. Yeah, I guess it was 98. So.
Oh, yeah.
So older than that, but yep. So The Insiders, The Hunted. It was quite an interesting song. It seemed like really dark lyrics. You know, you might not notice it as much was just a casual listen. I guess it's kind of the same theme as like Skillet Monster, where it's like talking about your body being going through suffering and stuff like that, but it seemed pretty weird.
Yeah, my interpretation of the song was there's like, you know, the spiritual battle, and then we have an antagonist, right? Like the like Satan is the accuser, the antagonist, or the dark side, and then they're like trying to hunt us down. But then also, you know, with like the Holy Spirit and with the redemption, I think my thought was like there's like a little prayer in the middle of it, and oh God, I beg for mercy, you know, on the souls that torture me. I ask that they be shown the grace that you've shown me. And then he says, the end is upon you. I release my anger on you. I'll destroy you. And then you will know that I am the Lord. And it says, you've become the hunted. And I think that the idea is like, all of a sudden, no longer is it Satan, but like God's turning it around. And he's like, no, I'm going to strike you down. You know, you're going after my people. But now, you know, eventually we know who wins the battle.
Yeah, I didn't really care much for the lyrics. I think it was a little too vague or dark. But I did really like the music. And actually, I really liked the rap rock sections on it. And was it the other members of the band doing that section? Or
I actually don't know. I thought it was a guest vocalist, but maybe it was another member of the band.
I did spend some time trying to track it down, and I couldn't find anything. That's why I was kind of assuming it wasn't. I really like how it was written, and this might be my favorite song of theirs, just from a music perspective and how the vocals are sung/rapped.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's cool. My favorite from them is their Motor City Ska album. But yeah, but that was like, you know, like I got into that right at like the heart of like third wave ska popularity, so and I was playing trumpet at the time, so that may have contributed to the why. But yeah, but I, for this album, I like this. This is a fun song.
One more song to discuss is from Five Iron Frenzy, and it's The Untimely Death of Brad. So I did look up kind of the story behind the song and things like that. But
I mean, I got the EP. I remember here just hearing rumors, kind of the people, when they released the song, it was like somebody on the message board or somebody online had suggested, you know, there were a lot of internet rumors, and this was the early days of internet rumors, and somebody said that their trumpet player had died. And so, you know, and there's plenty of other rumors that go along on the internet, and when you're a Christian band, you know, there's like, it's even compounded to some, you know, people. And it's hard to tell sometimes what's true, especially back in the day. So they turned it into, you know, there was a rumor, there's a line in the song, he's like, it's, you know, the untimely death of Brad, you know, it's on the internet, so then it must be true.
Yeah. I did enjoy reading the story on the song and stuff like that. So the trumpet player missed one show to attend a wedding, and the singer kind of flippantly said like, oh, he died, so we have a different trumpet player today. And so that spread to the internet, and then they decided to have some fun with it. You know, they don't even keep it straight for the full song. You know, they mention some stuff, or at least, you know, it's like, if you see him, remember to console him.
Yes.
Yeah, the details of his death are vague, unbelievable as it seems.
I don't believe in ghosts. I've never seen one, but isn't the trumpet playing haunting on this album?
Yeah.
And sometimes it seems like he's standing very near. Yeah. I hear his trumpet playing in my ear. Yeah. Sometimes it seems he's standing very near.
Yeah. I really like that. It's funny. Yeah. Just, yeah. Saying like, yeah, he doesn't believe in ghosts, you know? Yeah.
For me, it helps. Like, take away the morbidity of the song. Like, it would be a cruel joke if like Like, for me, for example, like, after my mom passed away, I didn't necessarily want to listen to this song. Or, like, any, if anybody has, like, a close friend or knows somebody who, like, I do. I have close friends who died when they were young. But for me, it doesn't, they're not making fun of that. They're making fun of internet rumors, and they're making fun of people taking things and going ridiculous. They're making fun of falsehoods and saying how ridiculous these falsehoods are. And that's why it works for me.
When I think of this, I think of the Paul is dead rumors, you know, from the Beatles. That's a little more morbid because there are people that actually believe it. It's a fun song for that. And I like the, you know, the trumpet playing on the album. You know, you're more aware of that, you know.
So. Yeah, there's some really cool Latin style trumpet in this song.
Yeah. I definitely appreciate it more now that I was studying it. You know, it wasn't, you know, my most memorable song, even on the EP. Definitely not for Five Iron, but I think kind of
on that EP,
all the stuff they do
on that EP, I'm gonna guess about which one's your favorite. It's probably "These Are Not My Pants," the country version, right? The country. "These are not my pants. I don't know whose they are. They smell a lot like Bobby's because he likes to fart." that's your favorite song, right, on the album?
That might be up there. Because I remember initially, yeah, like as a kid, "These Are Not My Pants" was my favorite. Yeah, the country was pretty good. I also like the fake censorship on the rap one.
Yo, me and Bobby, we was walking down the beep, though we didn't have nothing to beep, but we had our pants on. Yeah, that was good. Yeah, I like that one. I love that album because it's an EP, but I think it might be their longest runtime of any album that they have, technically, because there's so many secret songs. Just playing around the studio.
I love that might be my favorite title for an album, which obviously there's some good, they've came up with good albums for their album titles, but yeah, "Quantity is Job One" when it's a short album. Now my favorite song is "My Evil Plan to Save the World."
Oh yeah, on the album.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. And is Dandelions on that one too? I like Dandelions too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I really like that entire EP. But yeah. "My Evil Plan to Save the World" is pretty great.
Yeah, so those are kind of Halloween ghosts kind of themes, stuff like that. A lot of the Christian artists, you know, can have some songs that are at least playing with that because it's, you know, it's popular culture and stuff like that, you know?
I mean, ultimately, we believe that, you know, death is part of something that is, you know, it's mentioned in the scriptures, kind of like why it happens, and it isn't the end, ultimately. But yeah, I think it's nice that when, well, like some of the albums that we've talked about, you know, it's a little, some of them are really goofy, and then some of them are kind of more serious. But yeah, it's nice that we don't need to be afraid as believers. You know, we don't need to be afraid of death.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have this thing anymore. And the ghosts, and even like the, you know, the dark spiritual powers. And yeah, and the artists have different ways of, you know, responding to it.
I guess so. I think that's a good point. Yeah. Cool, that's our special episode. Yeah, hopefully you guys weren't turned off by the concept of it. But yeah, we'll try to keep things fresh and keep doing different things. You know, our contact is messianicmedia@gmail.com, facebook.com/messianicmedia, iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, etc. Hope you have a good Halloween if you're celebrating it, or other fall/winter holidays.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Messianic Media Podcast.
a discussion of messianic, Christian, and secular artistic works.